Welcome to the Congressional Awards Foundation podcast, Elevating DC Youth, a collaboration between the Office of Cable Television, Film, Music, and Entertainment, and the Congressional Award Foundation. This podcast is intended to help guide DC students through the opportunities the Congressional Award Program offers and provide information on how to explore the Congressional Award Program's pathways to career goals.
Hello and welcome to the Congressional Award Podcast led by the Dean of Radio Broadcast Program. I'm Aaron Sucker from Western DC, one of your co-hosts today.
Hi, my name is Jordan, also from Deanwood Radio Broadcast Program, and I will be your co-host for this podcast as well.
The Deanwood Radio Broadcast Program, which Jordan and I participate in, has been existing for 7 years, and over those 7 years, 24 people who participated in the program have been awarded full rides, and that's not including the non-graduating seniors this year. But in short, this program allows young kids like myself to stay occupied during the summer through learning about the power of network, which is instilled in us through our mentor, Salih, that it determines our network. While being in this program, we've gotten the pleasures of having Q&As with celebrities such as recording artist Raheem Devon, Family Matters star Kelly Williams, as well as political figures ranging from Anita Bonds to Trayon White and Councilmember McDuffie. So as you can see, the opportunities we're offering in this program are endless. Our only job is to network, ask questions, and have fun at the end of the day.
Yeah, Aaron put it phenomenally. That's a great representation of what this program is. Without further ado, if you want to go ahead and introduce our guests.
Now let's meet our guest, Chris Dunleavy, chairman of the ownership group for the Old Glory DC rugby team.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Real pleasure to be here with you guys, Aaron and Jordan.
Glad to be with you too.
Chris Dunleavy is the president and co-founder of Brailsford and Dunleavy, a 30-year practice regularly listed as one of the Engineering News Record's top 50 program management firms in the U.S. He is also a founder and owner of Set of Centers LLC, the nation's leading provider of outsourced management for collegiate and recreational sports facilities for the past two decades.
Since 2018, Mr. Dunleavy has also been a leader in the development of the Major League Rugby, the premier professional rugby union competition in North America. He also serves as both the chairman of the ownership group, All Glory DC, which is a tally competition in 2020 as the vice president of MLR's Board of Managers. Mr. Dunleavy is also a member of the College Fellows of America Institute of Architects. Today's topic is career growth and sustainability practices. And Chris Dunleavy, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Very happy to be here with you guys.
Happy to be too.
Let's just get started. Right into the topic. Today's topic is career growth and sustainability practices. The first question for me, I just want to know, when we talk about your career, I know you've done a lot of things, but I just want to know when you think about your career, what do you think like was the turning point and when you knew like, you know, this is what you wanted to do, like the path you're on, like this is what you wanted to do, like that this was going to be your life's work?
So there are probably a lot of spots in my life that I could call turning points. You know, there was a time in high school when I decided to get real serious about my studies and try to make sure I get in a good college. There was a time in college where I made a decision that I was going to study architecture. And I thought at the time I wanted to be an architect. There was a time after that when I started work as an architect after college and realized that design work wasn't really what my natural talents were for, that I was more of a strong project manager, but not so much a fancy designer. All those were turning points for me. I think the biggest one, though, was when I agreed to start my first business. My partner, Paul Brailsford, was a fellow that I worked with at another company. We had a job helping to manage building projects for colleges and universities and school districts and the like. And although we were pretty young professionals at the time, we were in our late 20s, he persuaded me that it was a good time for us to try to start our own company doing that project management work. And really, he talked me into it. I felt like it was a big risk at the time rather than having a more stable income working for somebody else. But it turned out to be the best move I made in my life, because I've spent the last 30 years as a partner with Paul building that company. And it's been one of the most successful partnerships of my life. Brailsford and Dunleavy is the name of our company, and it's still a growing and very healthy business. As you mentioned in your introduction, Jordan, it's one of the top ranked firms of our type in the country. But we're very proud of the work we do here in the district, as well as across the country.
I just want to start off with a question, like pertaining to your involvement in the Major League Rugby. I just want to know, like, how did that come about, and what strategies have you implemented to contribute to its growth and development as a premier professional sports competition in North America?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I mean, I got interested in rugby because I picked up playing rugby as a player back when I was in my 20s. It happens to be the case that the Washington, D.C. area is a very active part of the rugby community in the United States. You know, in most places in America, rugby is not as big as football, baseball, basketball, even hockey or soccer, but it is a growing sport. And I think because it's played in a lot of places overseas more often than here in the U.S., and because D.C. area is such a very international area, there happened to be a lot of rugby clubs in our region. So I latched on with one of them and learned to play the game and found that it was a very fun game back in my 20s. And then many years later, Major League Rugby was started by some other people out west. They decided they wanted to have the first professional league for rugby in the U.S. And at that point, I was no longer regularly playing because I'm a little past my prime these days, but I was still known for being part of the rugby community in the region. So the league actually called me up and said, "Hey, we're starting this new league. We think we'd like to have a team in Washington, D.C. Would you like to help start it?" And because in my day job with Brailsford and Dunleavy, I had spent a lot of years consulting on sports facilities and building sports facilities. We were one of the project managers for Nationals Park, by the way, as well as Audi Field in D.C. I knew just enough about sports business that I figured I could try to make a new startup professional sports team work. So I found a good partner, another guy named Paul, a different Paul. This is Paul Sheehy. And we started Old Glory in 2018. And it's taken a lot of work and a lot of investment, but we're starting to find some real success on the field and starting to grow our fan base and the attendance at our games as well. So it's been a pretty exciting ride.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to add to that question, like, how difficult was it, like, forming a team in D.C., like in North America, with rugby being so, like, big as it is and overseas, but not as big, like, in North America? How difficult was it to form a team in D.C.?
Yeah, it was very difficult. I'd say it's the hardest thing I've ever done. In fact, you know, it takes a lot of different kinds of effort to make a sports team work. You know, you need to first you need to create a good product, meaning you got to create a good team that's competitive, which means everything from finding great coaches and great players and then giving them great facilities to practice and train in and finding a good home stadium to play in, and all of those things take a lot of work. But then you also have to make it work as a business. Once you've got your product, you've got to draw your customers. Which means you've got to get people excited about being fans to the game. And in sports business today, you need to not just get people to come and watch your game and buy tickets, but you need to get people to actual companies to sponsor your team and partner with you. We call them commercial partners. And it means you need to talk a lot of big businesses into putting some money into your club to promote their own businesses. And that's a lot of work too. And the thing is, you know, the NFL and NBA, you know, they've had between, you know, 50 and 100 years now to do those things and build themselves up to where they are. We had to start it all at once. So that's why we're starting small and trying to cover all those bases at the same time and grow a little bit at a time to get to where we want to go.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you mentioned how, you know, you're working your way up and, you know, fans like commercials and fans are kind of drawn to the different players that, you know, that have some of the commercials that are, you know, that are social media, have a presence on social media. I just want to know, what do you like, where do you think the future of fan base is going? Because I feel like social media and how players are with the fans, and that really plays a bigger part in whether the team is good or not, to where fans are going to come, you know, actually come to the game. And I just want to know, like, how much does the location of the stadium, how friendly the players are, how does that all like contribute to how successful like your business or your team is going to be?
It's a really good point, Jordan, and a good question. I think today more than ever, you know, social media and other kinds of digital communication are more important to sports than it's ever been. You know, today's fan isn't the same as yesterday's fan. You know, when I was a kid, if you were a football fan, then the way you engaged was you would sit down at a television set and turn it on and watch a game for 3 hours. And then when that was over, that was all the interaction you had. Or maybe you got lucky and you could go to a game one day, but at the game, there was no interaction with players or ability to meet people and engage with them. Today, every player can interact with every fan through their social media, through different kinds of communications they have. And that seems to have changed the way fans access the sport. You know, people are less likely to sit down and watch a whole game on a screen, but they're a lot more likely to sort of pop in and out of watching video highlight clips or watching part of a game and or watching interviews and other what we call side content and interesting things about the players and the teams. And they get to know the players a little bit more in a different way. So I think we are moving more and more into a digital world, and we've got to figure out how we keep up with that as a sports organization. I think we're still always going to need people in our stadium, you know, to make it an exciting environment and event. So I don't think we're going to lose that sense of excitement about being at a place in person and watching the action right in front of you happening live. But at the same time, it's clear that the way media is moving, that the whole digital and social media interaction is just going to be more and more important.
I wanted to ask a question with you being a member of the College of Fellows of the American Institute of Architects. I just want to ask, like, if you do, like, do you ever use or integrate principles, like architectural principles, into your work, like with the major league rugby team or like your sports leadership roles? Do you ever?
Yeah, I mean, it is clearly two different things. You know, when I was an architect and building my project management business, that's definitely one set of skills and experiences. And taking the leap into owning a sports team is another whole thing. But it definitely comes into play. You know, as I was an architect, I was building sports facilities along the way. So it definitely helps me think about how to make sure we get the most out of the stadium opportunities that we have to operate in today. It did help me actually understand a bit how to you know, make a building make money for you, how to generate revenue, because you need to not only sell tickets, but you need to bring in, like I said, those corporate partners, and you got to find a way to make it an exciting environment where they can promote their businesses as well through things we do at the game. So I think there are definitely connections from what I learned over those 30 years as an architect and what I applied to being a sports business owner, even though it was definitely a transition for me to move from one to the other.
Yeah, it is a big transition.
Yeah, that's a huge transition. When you talk about this, the successful 30 years that you've had, I want to know, are there any specific goals and milestones that you hope to accomplish, like, in the future, especially in this sport of rugby? Because I know rugby is definitely growing. I'm starting to see more and more clips and highlights, and I'm starting to see more after school programs. I'm definitely getting involved with rugby. But, you know, what are your hopes and dreams for the sport of rugby in the future?
Great. Well, we would like to make sure that rugby becomes basically the sixth largest professional sport in the United States right after the Big Four and Major League Soccer, meaning, you know, after football, basketball, baseball, hockey, and soccer, we want rugby to be the biggest team sport in the U.S. And we want to get there by 2031. And the reason we want to get there by that year is there's an event called the Rugby World Cup. It's like the world championship of rugby. It's just like the Soccer World Cup, but all the best countries in the world, their national teams play each other in a huge tournament. And in 2031, the Rugby World Cup is going to be played here in the United States. And by that time, we want rugby to be big enough that we're really able to make a huge success of that event here in the U.S. It's the third largest attended sports event in the world, right after the Olympics and the Soccer World Cup. So we want to make sure that America as a country is ready to step up to that and make the event the big success that it is. If we do that, if we keep to that one goal, that is becoming that sixth largest league in the country, then we will have achieved all of our other goals, the business goals of you know, drawing the kind of fan base we want and generating the kind of revenues we want. So we really, we focus on that one. Everything is about how do we get to be that sixth largest league in the U.S. by 2031.
I wanted to ask, with you being the president and co-founder of Brailsford and Dunleavy, how are you like able to balance both leadership roles of being the co-founder, president of that management firm, but then like of another management firm with the Major League Rugby team?
Well, you guys ask good questions. Because you hit the nail on the head. It's a difficult balancing act. Basically, what happened was I've never stopped being full-time the president of Brailsford and Dunleavy. And that just means all my personal time gets turned over to helping to run the rugby team. I don't watch as much TV as lots of people do. I don't do a lot of relaxing and mowing my lawn on the weekends. I mostly do rugby stuff in my what would otherwise be my free time. So that's basically it. Those are the two things I dedicated to. Unfortunately, you know, I do it because rugby is something I'm passionate about. It's what I care about. It is my hobby and it is fun for me as much as it is another business. So it doesn't feel like a strain to do it, but it really does. Between those two things, that pretty much fills all my time.
Yeah, I mean, when you're doing something you love and like just like you said, it's your passion, you know, it won't even, you know, seem like work, honestly.
That's exactly right. I mean, it can feel hard, but you know, you get up every morning, be excited about going to do it.
Yeah, and with rugby being something like on the rise, like it's something you need to like tend to.
And I feel like, honestly, when we talk about, you know, doing things that you love, and it's going to be hard because, you know, just because, you know, you love it, I don't mean it's going to be easy. You know, everything comes with hardships. I'm wondering, like, if for you, like, if this wasn't hard and you didn't go through any hardships, and do you think that you can be successful without going through any hardships or struggling in some kind of way?
I don't know. Well, I've never been successful without a lot of hardship, without a lot of work. And I don't know if I know anybody else who has. I think everybody's got to put in the work to get what they want. I'll tell you this. The hardships, even they're, it's tough when you're going through them, they're what makes everything feel worthwhile when you do succeed. You know, if it had come easy, I wouldn't appreciate it as much as I do, knowing how hard it was to get to where I am. So it's worth the struggle. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. You know, it feels better.
Yep.
But yeah, I had another question just about the rugby scene. Like like where do you see Major League Rugby? Like, where do you see it being in the next, let me say, 10 years? 5 to 10 years, like where do you see it progressing to? Like, what do you see it to?
Two things. You know, one, like I said, I'm hopeful that nationally we become one of the biggest professional sports in the U.S. But I also hope that we are, as much as any other sport, we grow at the grassroots level, and we see more and more people learning and playing rugby as kids and as teenagers. All the way from ages 6 and up. You know, today we don't have rugby in as many schools as we'd like to have it. We don't have it in as many youth programs or colleges as we'd like to have it. So I think we'd like to see, we want to grow the game because that's where we are going to get better and better athletes to play the game in the future. And that's where we're going to build lots more fans, you know, people who get to like the game because they play it. And we do have a good starting point for that. You know, there is a lot of good, even youth level rugby in DC and in the Washington area here. But it's just, it's not broad enough and pervasive enough. So we want to get it in more and more places.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I've learned a lot just through this conversation. I've learned, you know, your opinions about rugby, where you hope rugby to go. Definitely, I'll now be watching rugby, you know, to see the evolution of it in the future. Do you have any other comments, Aaron?
No, it's just a pleasure to talk with you and just to add on to the rugby, like, progression. I feel like it should be implemented more in, like, over time, just in, like, boys and girls clubs and, you know, mm-hmm. just in programs like that. I feel like that would kind of take it to the next level. I feel like.
But yeah. I think you're right, Aaron. Well, thank you. It was a pleasure speaking with each of you. I appreciate being on the podcast, but particularly I congratulate you guys on your professionalism and your interest in this field. I think it's great to have a passion about a field that you want to pursue in the future as young as you guys are. So good luck to you, and I see a great future for you.
Good luck to you too. Thank you so much. Well, there's more to come. Please stay with us for more of the Congressional War Podcast led by Deanwood Radio Broadcast Program. That'll about wrap it up. Thank you so much for being with us today and talking with us.
Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to the Congressional Awards Foundation Podcast, Elevating DC Youth. The Congressional Awards Foundation Podcast, Elevating DC Youth, is a collaboration between the Office of Cable Television, Film, Music, and Entertainment and the Congressional Award Foundation. For more information about the Congressional Award Foundation, visit congressionalaward.org.